Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Wednesday, October 7th, 2020. This is Section B, Health and Wellness. This article is entitled, The Breast Center Offers Testing to Detect Genetic Mutation, by Jennifer Dumier, Midland Health. When you come to the breast center, there is a new component that will be included in your care. You will be given a tablet and asked some questions about your personal and family health history. Your answers to these questions will determine if you qualify for genetic testing. Since everyone does not need genetic testing, this determination is made based on criteria from the National Comprehensive Cancer Network guidelines. From the answers to these questions, you will know whether you qualify for genetic testing. Personal and family history are some of the things that qualify you for genetic testing. Personal history of breast cancer at any age, ovarian cancer at any age, metastatic prostate cancer at any age, pancreatic cancer at any age, colorectal cancer before age 65, endometrial cancer before age 65, family history of breast cancer in a first or second degree relative younger than the age of 50, two breast cancers in any one relative at any age, three or more breast cancers in relatives on the same side of the family at any age, ovarian, metastatic prostate, pancreatic cancer or male breast cancer at any age, colon, rectal, or uterine slash endometrial cancer diagnosed younger than the age of 50, any first degree relative with a genetic mutation identified. Only about 10% of patients diagnosed with breast cancer have a genetic mutation. However, if you are found to have a breast cancer gene mutation, your risk of developing breast cancer sometime in your lifetime is exponentially higher than other patients without a genetic mutation. If you are found to qualify for genetic testing, you will watch an educational video and speak to a genetic counselor on the telephone. After you complete the education and speak with the genetic counselor, we will then visit with you to answer any further questions. If you choose to have genetic testing, we will draw your blood while you are still at the center and send the genetic testing to be done. If there will be any out-of-pocket expenses, you will be notified before the test is run at the laboratory. There is also financial assistance available through Myriad, the company providing the genetic testing. The results will be returned to the breast center in a few weeks. You will be called with the results and asked to return to the breast center if there is need for further preventative testing that needs to be discussed personally. If you need to be followed by a physician for these recommendations, we will facilitate that referral. Our main goals at the breast center are first and foremost to detect breast cancer as early as possible, and secondly, to provide personalized care. Genetic testing is our latest avenue to provide personalized care. Having a high-risk breast center here in Midland assures you once again that there's no place like home when it comes to your breast imaging and breast care needs. For more information, the breast center is located at 5615 Deauville Boulevard. To schedule an appointment for a mammogram, call 221-3627. Jennifer Dumier is a nurse navigator at the breast center. This article is entitled COVID-19 Devastates Human Sanity Sensibility by Dr. Mudassar Hassan, Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center. A smooth and regulated routine of events is the key to normality in a life that we crave. Tumult is the causality of life. In the causality of life can drive humans insane, especially when it is unprecedented and unexpected. COVID-19 has created a ripple effect in routine life. The disruption may have been quiet, but it has created loud echoes in conscious and subconscious peripheries. The most adversely affected are children and adolescents. Their social, emotional, and mental welfare are significantly impacted. The isolation, regularity, irregularity, uncertainty, and insecurity have created havoc for them. Students living abroad have suffered immensely with the fear and insecurity of this whole scenario. Given the technological advancement and access, they have been coping with the academic challenge, but the family financial and mental upheaval has been significant. The virtual online world eventually causes them to feel frustrated and depressed without any human contact for such a long time of social distancing. COVID-19 has created traumatic consequences on the developing and underdeveloped sensibilities of children and adolescents. Lack of a daily routine of events and actions and facing challenges in complying with the newer situations has been dramatically overwhelming for the evolving consciousness. Distant or remote learning, divorced from human interaction, has taken away the essence of education. Our youth fill up paperwork with online learning, but our youth's capacity for learning is jeopardized. Children and adolescents are prone to anxiety, depression, and suicide because of these challenging situations. Mental and physical health has been drastically affected owing to the unfavorable circumstances of many households. Every youth's home may not be a perfect, peaceful abode. A teen stuck in such toxic household situations will probably go through irreversible emotional damage to their minds and souls. Many are suffering from a personal and social setback. Social and human connection is the most vital postulate of average growth, and it saves youth from mental anguish. Our youth can benefit from maintaining daily routine life and giving them a specific routine or order. Order brings sanity, and COVID-19 has negatively impacted this order drastically. Going back to school again has brought about anxiety and insecurity in both parents and adolescents. They are as scared to be affected by the virus and frustrated with remote learning and homebound situations. The overall scenario has brought about significant alterations in our youth's moods and behaviors, which deviate from normal by hurting a lot of their genuine potential. Human sanity and sensibility have been the worst devastation created by COVID-19. Dr. Mudassar Hassan is a child and adolescent psychiatry fellow at the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center Department of Psychiatry. This article is entitled "Federal Funds to Help Nursing Homes Buy Equipment for Visits" by Robert T. Garrett, Dallas Morning News. Austin. State officials announced Friday they will help nursing homes tap $3.5 million in federal funds to buy equipment that would allow more visitors during the coronavirus pandemic. Certified nursing homes in Texas can apply for up to $3,000 each toward purchasing plexiglass barriers for expanded indoor visitants and tents to accommodate more safe gatherings outdoors, Governor Greg Abbott and the Health and Human Services Commission announced. Texas has 1,213 such homes, said Commission spokeswoman Christine Mann. The $3.5 million is part of a bigger pool of funds the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services took in after levying fines on nursing homes that violate federal rules. The move comes a few weeks after Abbott announced plans, which took effect September 24th, for up to two essential caregivers to resume indoor visits, provided they've tested negative for COVID-19 in the last 2 weeks. Those visits are allowed without a plexiglass divider, as the caregivers do such things such as clean hearing aids. but the state is still requiring relatives and visitors who are not essential caregivers to be separated from the resident at all times by a plexiglass barrier. Such visits are only allowed in a county with a COVID-19 positivity rate of 10% or less. The head of a leading nursing home trade group welcomed the state-administered federal stipends, saying providers understand the importance of resuming visits. "Everyone wants to see this work," said Kevin Warren, president of the Texas Healthcare Association. But one advocate of more rapidly expanded family visits, Mary Nichols of Forney, "The state needs to stop foot dragging by some nursing homes on allowing designated caregiver visits. If a facility gets $3,000, I hope they spend it all on tents, because I don't approve of plexiglass barriers," said Nichols, who said the Texas Caregivers for Compromise group she launched in July now has 3,000 members. For residents with cognitive decline, visits in plexiglass booths can increase, not decrease, agitation and anxiety, she said. Abbott said the goal of the new funding is to help keep nursing facility residents and their families safe while ensuring that residents can be with their loved ones. More than 29,000 Texas nursing home residents have contracted the virus, and 4,032 of them have died. As of Friday, about 2,140 residents had active cases of COVID-19 at 514 different facilities, according to self-reported data compiled by the commission. This column is distributed by Tribune Content Agency.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, October 4th, 2020. Opinion. National View. The importance of Amy Coney Barrett. The Point. The judge can solidify an originalist majority on the high court. President Trump's nomination of Amy Coney Barrett for the Supreme Court is a highlight of his presidency and perhaps a hinge moment for the judiciary. Judge Barrett's record and intellect suggest she can join Mr. Trump's other appointees in reviving core constitutional principles in American law and life. If this sounds like a tall order for one justice, we do not mean to suggest this is her job alone. She is the latest example of a new generation of originalist judges whom Mr. Trump and the GOP Senate have elevated to the federal bench. The numbers, 3 justices and 53 appellate court judges, are crucial, but more important is how they approach the law. With rare exceptions, they think of themselves as protectors of the proper constitutional order, not as a third policy-making alternative to the political branches. Though she has only served 3 years on the federal bench, Judge Barrett certainly seems an exemplar of this model. At the White House last Saturday, Judge Barrett said her legal principles are those of the late Justice Antonin Scalia, for whom she clerked. This could be dismissed as a rote genuflection to the revered Scalia, but her opinions and scholarship suggest she means it. As David Rivkin and Andrew Grossman write nearby, her reasoning shows careful attention to statute and the Constitution. Her dissent in Cantor v. Barr, 2019, on broad restrictions on gun rights for convicted criminals is especially impressive. The easy decision would have been to go along with the panel majority and popular opinion by barring gun ownership to felons. Judge Barrett looked at the constitutional history and the Supreme Court's Heller precedent to make important distinctions that protect the Second Amendment the way liberal jurists once protected the First Amendment regarding unpopular political speech. Perhaps on the High Court she can coax Chief Justice John Roberts to stop treating the Second Amendment as the prodigal son of the Bill of Rights. Democrats will portray her as a blank check for executive power, but they misjudge her principles. She has ruled against the Trump administration on immigration law, notably in Morales versus Barr, a deportation case. At a Hillside College event in 2019, she noted that Justice Robert Jackson owed his career to Roosevelt. Yet Jackson did not allow whatever personal loyalty or affection that he had for Roosevelt influence his decision in Korematsu, the Japanese-American internment case in World War II. Unfortunately, he was in the minority. His was a dissent. The court decided 6-3 that the exclusion order was constitutional. The political left is also portraying Judge Barrett as a radical who will easily dismiss precedent, especially on abortion. This is what they say about every conservative, and they are wrong. She adhered faithfully to precedent on the Seventh Circuit, notably on abortion in Price v. Chicago, 2019. One dissent she joined in an Indiana abortion case was vindicated at the Supreme Court. Our guess is that on overturning precedent, she will fall in the court's middle, more willing than the Chief Justice, but less than Justices Clarence Thomas and Neil Gorsuch. A note about abortion is in order here that will displease the left and right. Both sides claim for political reasons that they anticipate a repeal of Roe v. Wade, but they are likely to be disappointed. Anti-abortion conservatives once supported Anthony Kennedy for the High Court because, like Judge Barrett, he is Catholic, only to be disappointed in Planned Parenthood versus Casey, 1992. Roe was transcended by Casey, which further embedded abortion rights in precedent. You can believe, as even Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg said, that Roe was based on faulty logic and still believe the right to abortion is too settled in law to overturn now. The real legal battleground will be over the limits of state regulation, such as late-term abortion and health restrictions. It's no accident that Clarence Thomas is the only current justice who has called for overturning Roe. Demanding that a nominee declare herself on Roe is a destructive exercise, whether from Democrat Mazie Hirono or Republican Josh Hawley, and Judge Barrett shouldn't answer. Every new justice changes the dynamics on the High Court and in ways that are hard to predict. One helpful change with the sixth center-right justice is that Chief Justice Roberts would need to persuade at least one other conservative if he wants to form a majority with the three remaining progressives. Democrats view all this with horror, but we think they would be wiser to view it as an opportunity. One reason court nominations have become so bitter is because progressives have long viewed the judiciary as a second legislature for policies they can't pass in Congress. Think racial preferences and climate regulation. Massachusetts versus EPA, 2007. If that avenue is foreclosed, as we hope it will be, then the left may have to achieve what they want the old-fashioned way, democratic persuasion and consent. This is also a lesson for Republicans who shouldn't default to the courts simply because there are more conservatives on the bench. In the best case, a more modest Supreme Court that sticks to the law and its constitutional calling may even cause Congress to return to doing its job of forging durable consensus. All of this is hope for the judicial future. For now, and no matter the election consequences, Republican senators should do their elected duty and confirm an excellent nominee. Win or lose in November, they will have left a significant legacy in restoring proper constitutional government. The Wall Street Journal. Supreme Court and Rules of the Game. The United States Constitution's Article 2, Section 2, Clause 2, provides that the President of the United States shall nominate and, by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, shall appoint ambassadors, other public ministers and consuls, judges of the Supreme Court, and all other officers of the United States. President Donald Trump has nominated Amy Coney Barrett as U.S. Supreme Court Justice, who will replace the late Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Barrett currently serves as United States Circuit Judge of the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. The 7th Circuit serves the Midwestern states of Illinois, Indiana, and Wisconsin. It is now the Senate's job to decide whether to confirm Barrett's appointment as an Associate Justice on the Supreme Court. In thinking about the Senate's criteria for making their decision, we might ask, what is the role of a U.S. Supreme Court Justice? A reasonable answer is to recognize that our Constitution represents our rules of the game. It dictates what is and is not permissible behavior by government and its citizens. Therefore, a Supreme Court Justice has one job and one job only, namely, that of a referee. A referee's job, whether he is a football referee, baseball umpire, or a Supreme Court Justice, is to know the rules of the game and to ensure that those rules are evenly applied without bias. Do we want a referee or justice to allow empathy to influence their decisions? Let us answer this question using this year's Super Bowl as an example. The San Francisco 49ers have played in 7 Super Bowls in their franchise history, winning 5 times. On the other hand, coming into the 2020 game, the Kansas City Chiefs had not won a Super Bowl title in 50 years. In anyone's book, this is a gross disparity. Should the referees have the empathy to understand what it is like to be a perennial loser, not winning a Super Bowl in 5 decades? What would you think of a referee whose play calls were guided by empathy or pity? Suppose a referee, in the name of compensatory justice, stringently applied pass interference or roughing the passer violations against the San Francisco 49ers and less stringently against the Chiefs. Would you support a referee who refused to make offensive pass interference calls because he thought it was a silly rule? You would probably remind him that it is the league that makes the rules, football law, not referees. Supreme Court justices should be umpires or referees enforcing neutral rules. Here is a somewhat trivial example of a neutral rule from my youth. Let us call it Mom's Rule. On occasion, my sister and I would have lunch in my mother's absence. Either my younger sister or I would have the job of dividing the last piece of cake or pie. Almost always, an argument would ensue about the fairness of the cut. Those arguments ended when Mom came up with a rule. Whoever cuts the cake gives the other person the first choice of the piece to take. As if by magic or divine intervention, fairness emerged and arguments ended. No matter who did the cutting, there was an even division. This is what our society needs, the kind of rules whereby you would be okay even if your worst enemy were in charge. Despite the high stakes of bitterly fought football contests, most games end peaceably, and the winners and losers are civil. It is indeed a miracle of sorts that players with conflicting interests can play a game, agree with the outcome, and walk away as good sports. That miracle is that it is far easier to reach an understanding about the game's rules than the game's outcome. The same conflict-reducing principles should be a part of a civilized society. Walter Williams. Williams is an economics professor at George Mason University and is also a syndicated columnist.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, October 4, 2020. What should be the number one priority of the next board? And please present a priority that allows us to use a metric to measure whether the board was successful. For example, most people would agree that parental involvement should increase, but it is impossible to provide data on whether that is taking place. District 1. Michael Booker. District 1 candidate. Hiring right superintendent is top priority. I feel that the number one priority of our new school board needs to remain on finding a solid leader for our district. MISD needs to have a superintendent that is laser-focused on meeting the goals that our school board trustees set. Everything starts with leadership. Leadership can make or break an organization, and having the right superintendent can point our district towards success. If our board can select a great superintendent, one who will hold all of the district leaders accountable, it will encompass all the areas where our district is failing. The struggles our district faces are a direct result of poor management and leadership that is not listening. Prioritizing the search for a superintendent that focuses on our district's goals will directly impact MISD in a positive way. Our school board's priority has to be focused on finding a superintendent that will hold our central office accountable in accomplishing the goals that we as a board and we as a community expect. I believe that if we have the right leadership at the head of MISD, then our central office will focus on academic success because they are being held accountable to it. If we have the right leadership, then we know that culture and morale will improve across the district because we have a superintendent that holds central office and district leaders accountable to it. If we have the right leadership, then we will see facilities that are maintained properly because our superintendent will hold our central office staff accountable to it. I want to see a leader that doesn't tell teachers, "Well, if you don't like it, then don't work here." The attitude should be, "If you don't like it and it isn't working for you, what do you think needs to change to make it better?" It's not hard to gauge if we have a good leader. Is the superintendent meeting the goals the trustees have set for them? I am aware that change takes time. However, we should see constant improvement from our district. We should see progress in our short-term goals, which will then affect our long-term goals. We should not see a plateau of our academics, or even worse, a decline of those academics, if we are improving our district with effective management. Under the right leadership, we should see consistent academic incline. We should see retention over recruitment in our teachers. We should see our facilities maintained better and community members that are listened to. Hiring the right person to fulfill this job can point our district toward success. Having a superintendent that can communicate effectively, motivate their team, handle responsibilities, and takes ownership over our schools will help make MISD a district that our community can be proud of. One thing I believe in is that all school board members, both present and future, should make themselves accessible to our community. Listening to the voices that trustees represent is important. Please feel free to contact me at Michael Booker for District 1 on Facebook or email me at michaelbooker0802@gmail.com. James Fuller, District 1 candidate. Improving academic performance is top priority. Before the next board can address what I consider to be the number one priority in the district, first, the next board must hire a new superintendent and devise the appropriate metric for his or her evaluation. Then, with the new superintendent in place, the number one priority for the district should be improving overall academic performance and eliminating low-performing schools. Accountability. The current TEA metric, accountability system, should be used in conjunction with the appropriate rubrics to determine academic progression or regression on each of MISD's respective campuses. Other considerations to be included in addressing Priority 1 are the official demographic profile of the district, curriculum, and graduation rates. If equity and equality become the rule and not the exception at MISD, Priority 1 will be achieved. Matt Galindo, District 1 candidate. Measures are in place, leaders must be held accountable. The number one priority of this next board should be improving academics and reducing the number of F-rated schools in our district. Lone Star Governance has given the board the ability to focus and create specific goals to improve student outcomes and monitor progress monthly. For example, our current goals consist of 1. The percentage of students in kindergarten through second grade that are reading on or above grade level on two measures shall increase from 50% to 75% by the end of the school year 2020. 2. The percentage of students in grades 3 through 8 that meet passing standards, approaches, meets, or masters on both reading and mathematics STAR shall increase from 52% to 75% by the end of the school year 2020. 3. The four-year graduation rate shall increase from 85% for the graduating class of 2015, reported in November 2016, to 95% for the graduating class of 2020, will be reported in November 2021. Unfortunately, most goals were not met. That student outcome led to new watered-down benchmark goals and the termination of our superintendent. For us to improve academically, we must hold our district leaders accountable. After all, the superintendent and his chiefs are ones responsible under the system of great schools. The board must ask questions to ensure our leaders are being proactive and have a plan of action. Accountability is not a bad word, but is required to make progress and give our children the education they deserve. We are not looking for perfection, but we are looking for significant improvement. It is up to the next board and superintendent to make it happen. District 2. Keeping the focus on academics is key. Rachel Davis, District 2 candidate. What is the main goal for sending our children to school? To ensure that they are provided with a quality education. The number one priority of every trustee, parent, teacher, administrator, and superintendent must be academics. The current state of MISD's academics seems to make mediocrity, and even in some cases failure, the standard. We have so many amazing teachers in MISD. We should be a district that is thriving, a district that our communities around Texas can look toward as a goal to aspire to become. We can no longer sit by and allow a system of great schools to continue to fail academically. We have to get a better understanding of why we have schools in our district that continue to have less than stellar grades year after year, and take the appropriate steps to turn our academics around. Our job as a district is to create a lifelong love of learning for our students, and that is not something that we are currently accomplishing. Throughout our district, we have a team of amazing teachers that are teaching both virtual and face-to-face, pouring their heart and souls into our youth. Yet, we are not only failing our students, we take no ownership over these failures. We continue to place the blame on the teachers for the programs not working that central office has implemented. It is time to stop the excuses and start taking action and responsibility. I believe that providing every campus with a reading and math interventionist will be the first step toward seeing our students excel and bring honor merits to every campus in our district. A behavioral specialist at every campus would allow our teacher to focus on what they do best, which is teaching. Requiring our teachers to deal with discipline in the classroom is a disservice to them and a distraction to the rest of their students. We need to stop asking teachers to push data and actually provide them with a service that offers solutions and results. We need to make sure all our campuses are functioning safely, so it doesn't distract from the educational experience. Academics have to remain at the focus of our board moving forward. How are the decisions our board is making going to directly affect academics in a positive way? As a school board trustee, my focus will always remain on academic performance of MISD. We need to ensure that we excel in our reading scores and all academic standards. We need to build a certified team of teachers and provide them with everything they need to do their job to best of their ability. We need to provide them with opportunities for training and personal development that our district pays for. No teacher should have to foot the bill to provide more quality teaching skills. We, as a district, need to provide the opportunity for teachers to do what they do best, which is to teach. By removing the distractions from their goals, unnecessary data pushing, facility issues, and opportunities for interventionalists to step in and work one-on-one with students in need. Midland has the opportunity to change the direction of where our education has been headed for many years. We have the chance to make a comeback. We have the ability to turn 9 failing schools into A-rating campuses if we keep our vision and goals focused on academics. We can make Midland the standard of education that districts around Texas strive to emulate. MISD should continue with current plan. Robert Marquez, District 2 candidate. The number one priority needs to be continued collaboration with our community concerning MISD's plan with student outcomes in relationship to academics. It seems that 4 years ago, we opened up the doors to MISD with collaboration in true discussion with our community through Lone Star Governance and System of Great Schools. In my opinion, the progress that is measured and has accountability has been embraced as we continue to strive for excellence in student outcomes. If elected, I plan to continue to support the work of setting new goals through Lone Star Governance with collaboration from teachers and community. District 4. Improving student outcomes requires starting early. Editor's note, candidate Joel Dial did not send an opinion piece in response to the question. Katie Wallace Joyner, District 4 candidate. The number one priority of the MISD School Board is to improve student outcomes. Every decision the board makes should be viewed through the lens of, will this decision help students in Midland succeed? As I stated in my last op-ed, the number one decision our next school board will make is the hiring of a high-quality superintendent who is uniquely suited for Midland and is laser-focused on that same goal. As a school board member, I want to do everything I can to be part of the solution. The first step in finding any solution is understanding the problem. I believe the problem begins with a lack of opportunity for our youngest students. Extensive research has been done showing that students who are enrolled in a public pre-K program are more prepared to start kindergarten and go on to have more successful academic careers. Right now, Midland does not have the capacity to offer pre-K programs to all of our children. This lack of kindergarten readiness is the beginning of a systemic problem that continues to be amplified each subsequent year. I know that our fantastic kindergarten teachers work hard to cover their curriculum, but if they are forced to spend the first portion of the school year teaching skills that would otherwise have been learned in pre-K, it already puts them at a disadvantage. Some of those students then move on to first grade, already in a learning deficit. Without focused remediation for those who are behind, this gap can grow year over year. These problems can be prevented by offering robust pre-K programs and enrollment to every MISD family. Furthermore, our district must address the social and emotional needs of every child in order to create a positive and stable learning environment. MISD has recently taken steps, through philanthropic giving, to partner with the Meadows Mental Health Institute. The goal of this partnership is to develop a strategic mental health framework and assess where the district is most vulnerable. The hope is that this framework will reduce suspensions, increase positive relationships, and keep kids in school. Test scores and grades will improve with the prioritization of mental health. The overall well-being of a child is a key component in raising test scores and improving student outcomes. Hopefully, we are soon going to be entering a post-COVID world, and with it an unknown and likely unprecedented learning gap. Pre-pandemic, our district was already struggling with unacceptable academic performance, and I fear that things may get worse before they get better. We can and will improve our academic scores and core curriculum if we make simple, positive, and daily changes in the lives of children. This will lay the groundwork for healthy learning and set our students up for success. So how can we empirically measure the solutions to these problems? MISD can grow the number of students enrolled in pre-K programs and measure that growth year over year. MISD can also create or procure programming that centers around mental health and teaches students how to manage stress, cope with failures, and help develop more well-rounded students. The effectiveness of the strategy can be measured by a decrease in the student dropout rate and the number of disciplinary infractions and an increase in overall test scores and graduation rates. A Vote for Me, Katie Walsh Joyner, is a vote to improve academic success. I will work hard as an agent of change to achieve better student outcomes and tangible solutions. Please vote for me, MISD District 4. Thank you for your support. Katie Wallace Joyner. Bulk of attention should go toward improving academics. Stevie Vargas, District 4 candidate. The number one priority of our current school board and any future school board needs to be solely focused on improving our academics. Our school board and our district need to ensure we are providing the necessary tools and resources to our teachers and staff to give them the greatest opportunity to succeed. We need our primary focus and the bulk of our attention to be directed toward the improvement of our academics. It is important that we, as a board, set goals along the way, short-term goals, mid-term goals, and long-term goals, so that we can measure the progress of our district through our children's success. This will help provide real-time updates on what techniques and implementations are working in our district, and if we should continue to utilize the systems that we are currently working with. It is time that we, as a district, allow our teachers to get back to work and restore their trust that we support them to provide the best to our children to ensure academic success. We need our teachers to have creative freedom in their classrooms. Our teachers are the greatest asset and investment, and we need to treat them as such. Our teachers are the greatest asset and investment, and we need to treat them as such. Our teachers are part of the solution to resolve this rapid decline in our school's academics. Our teachers are the people day in and day out, reevaluating lesson plans and teaching methods, ensuring that each kid is learning and retaining knowledge the best they can. We need to make it a priority to be retaining and incentivizing these good teachers, because good quality teachers are the best way to help fix our academics. Teachers that are going to provide our children the best quality education they can possibly provide, especially when the district has provided them with the tools they need to be set up for success. We need to make sure that teachers that raise concerns that interrupt our children's curriculum are not reprimanded and retaliated against. We need to make sure that our facilities provide the safest and most convenient learning environment for the success of our children. We need to ensure our facilities are functional, efficient, and safe so that we can direct all of our time and resources to our academics. It is a distraction to our students' educational experience to not have functioning and safe facilities. It's time we get MISD pointed in the right direction and provide our children with the greatest we have to give. It's apparent that some members on the school board are incapable of that, as they have served a failing school board for a number of years without resolve. It is time that we hold those members accountable for our district's failures. It's time for leadership that holds the best interest of our children as their main concern. Leadership with integrity that citizens have confidence in and are a true representation of their districts. Leadership that is transparent and continues to set the example and standard. I will continue to fight for what is morally right and within the best interest of our children. Our children are our greatest resource, and it is our responsibility to pave the way for their success by providing the best opportunities we possibly can. I encourage any member of our community that has questions, comments, or feedback to please reach out to me personally at vargasdistrict4@gmail.com or on Facebook at Stevie Vargas for MISD District 4.
This is the Nation page. This is the obituary column for Monday, October 5th, 2020. Colonel Andre Catania, retired. Army officer passed away at his home on September 14th, 2020. He was preceded in death by his wife, Jackie. He is survived by his two sons and their wives, Andrea and Richard Catania, Sylvia and Bertrand Catania, and three grandchildren, Rick, Charlotte, and Mathilde. Donations in his memory can be made to the Wounded Warrior Project, P.O. Box 758-516, Topeka, Kansas, 66675, or www.woundedwarriorproject.org.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Surgery valid for 90-year-old. Dear Dr. Roach, my 90-year-old father has been diagnosed with breast cancer. His doctor is recommending mastectomy, after which time they will determine a course of treatment. My father is fairly healthy for his age, although he does have high blood pressure, diabetes, and spinal stenosis, for which he takes oral medications. He has a history of transient ischemic attack at age 75. I am concerned that the risks of surgery at this age may be greater than that posed by the cancer. There is not much information available on male breast cancer, and any information you could provide would be appreciated. G.S. Answer. I am sorry about your father. Breast cancer in men is less common than in women, but usually diagnosed later, as male breast cancer is not readily suspected by patients or many physicians. Yours is a question I have seen frequently in medical practice. The risk of cancer increases with age, and it is not uncommon to see a person who, like your dad, has been doing pretty well until a cancer is diagnosed at a late age. Some people choose to ignore it, but in your father's case, I would still be likely to agree with his doctor's recommendation of surgery. Although any surgery at age 90 should be taken seriously, mastectomy is not particularly dangerous. The surgery not only will provide critical information about your father's diagnostic options, it will also tell a lot about his prognosis. Perhaps most importantly of all, the surgery can reduce potential pain and suffering in many cases. Untreated breast cancer in both men and women can have terrible physical effects. These are much better prevented than treated. Even with his medical issues, surgery is relatively low risk, and the benefits in understanding treatment options and their expected benefits, as well as reducing risk of complications from local tumor growth, makes this a strong recommendation. Of course, it's your father's decision, but I agree with his doctor's recommendation.
Researching family history exposes old murder charges. Dear Abby, for Wednesday, October 7th, 2020. Dear Abby, while researching my family, I discovered that my now elderly mother was charged with the murder of a toddler 40 years ago, before I was born. She was never convicted and never mentioned it. However, after reading her testimony and things she's said after the incident, I have no doubt she is guilty. This has me reeling because she has always been a great and loving mother. When she heard I was researching our family, she mentioned that I would find something unsavory and asked me to please not look into it, because it's in the past and she didn't want it to tarnish my image of her. I don't know how to feel or what to do. Shocked in the West. Dear Shocked, if your mother was charged with murder, either the charges were dropped or she was found innocent by a jury. You wrote that your mother was a great and loving mother. For that, you should feel grateful, because not all children are so fortunate as you were. I think it's time for you to take the opportunity to get her side of the story. Unless you have all the facts, the last thing you should do is judge her. Dear Abby, my sweet, introverted son has just started high school. He's a shy person who has a hard time making friends, and the few friends he had in middle school aren't attending the same high school. He has confided that he is terrified that he will be bullied and won't know how to respond. He asked me if there was a phrase that repels bullies. I told him I don't know any, and I would ask you. Worried Mom. Dear Worried Mom, Like your son, many students transitioning to high school are afraid of the unknown. Why is he afraid of being bullied? Did it happen to him in middle school? If so, why? Many schools have anti-bullying policies in place, and students who are subjected to it should report it immediately. While I know of no one-size-fits-all phrase that will repel a bully, I do think that enrolling your son in martial arts classes would give him a sense of confidence that he is lacking now. You should also encourage him to get involved with special interest groups at his new school, which might enable him to meet and interact more with kids and possibly make new friends. Dear Abby, my husband insists that I go out in public without wearing any underwear. He thinks it's sexy. I am uncomfortable doing so because it makes me feel dirty and trashy. I also feel it is unsanitary. Your thoughts? Not my thing in Virginia. Dear Knot, I'm glad you asked. Dirty and trashy are separate issues from unsanitary. You are a married adult woman, and wearing or not wearing anything under your dresses or skirts has no bearing on whether you are or aren't a good girl. I imagine some couples go out for a special night on the town, commando, because it's exciting, they're secret, and maybe can lead to romance later. Some people also feel more comfortable never wearing underwear. If you have questions about whether the practice is unhealthy, discuss it with your physician or gynecologist. Bottom line, you should not do anything you're uncomfortable with. Jacqueline Begar Stars by Madeline Aslan. Note, Begar Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label that astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Libra and a moon in Gemini. Happy birthday for Wednesday, October 7th, 2020. Rebellious, idealistic, and charming, you have piercing and insightful views, and you seek in some way to better the human condition. This year, you succeed in a solo effort, and you make much money doing it. If single, you might choose to stay solitary for some time before you find a mate. If attached, you share warmth and intimacy with your partner, albeit with some restlessness. Virgo gives you necessary space. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21st through April 19th, 3 stars. Commuter travel or a short neighborhood trip brings a chance encounter or experience that serves to awaken new perspectives. You will be exposed to those who have different philosophies of life than yours. Tonight, ongoing emails and phone calls. Taurus, April 20th through May 20th, 4 stars. You're slightly distracted with your work today. You will long to make some new purchases, either to give as gifts or to add pleasure to recreation hours. Be sensible and study your budget before overextending, though. Tonight, balanced online retail therapy. Gemini, May 21st through June 20th, 4 stars. The adventurer within you awakens. You're weary of the details of daily routine and long for expansion. Keep your cheerful outlook and be aware of how associates are affecting you. Cultivate positive companions. Tonight, it's your party and you'll cry if you want to. Cancer, June 21st through July 22nd, 4 stars. Peace and quiet today helps you find a sense of direction. You have ideas concerning future plans that others aren't receptive to just yet. Natural beauty in a wilderness setting helps you align your natural inner rhythms. Tonight, examine new options and seek advice. Leo, July 23rd through August 22nd, 5 stars. Favors are unexpectedly returned. Friends are sincere and supportive. You will be wise in your selection of long-range goals. Working on projects that have enduring quality brings satisfaction today. Think longevity. Tonight, you will feel more grounded and secure. Libra, September 23rd through October 22nd, 5 stars. you can travel back to an old haunt. It's also a favorable time to reread a favorite book or to review language skills. Stories or poems with a profound message have considerable appeal. You'll feel more optimistic. Tonight, interest in forming a new partnership. Scorpio, November 22nd through December 21st, 4 stars. You attract compliments and adoration from unlikely sources today. Be honest about feelings if a romantic mood is exhibited by someone to whom you're not drawn. There could be some new developments at work to analyze. Tonight, intimate date night. Capricorn, December 22nd through January 19th, 4 stars. Turn daily duties into a competitive game to boost morale. Your energy and enthusiasm make you an inspiration to coworkers. Don't hesitate to take on new responsibility. And make sure to get some exercise in today. Tonight, delicious home-cooked meal. Aquarius, January 20th through February 18th, 5 stars. Today helps you know yourself better and tap into your potential. Others are more loving and cooperative. You can share a good joke with someone you care for. Celebrate by reaching out and focusing on creative projects and hobbies. Tonight, fun late night. Pisces, February 19th through March 20th, 5 stars. Entertain at home. Plan a family activity. Elderly relatives might have entertaining information about genealogy and family traditions. It's a splendid time to redecorate and rearrange your home. Tonight, everyone chips in with rearranging the house, with varying different results. Born today, psychiatrist R.D. Lang, 1927. Archbishop Desmond Tutu, 1931. Writer Anita Shrev, 1946.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.